We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show, here with my guest, Chelsea Zimmerman. Chelsea, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com. She also is the editor-in-chief at catholiclane.com. If you've got a question or a comment for Chelsea on any of the issues we've been talking about or bioethical questions, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You could email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Chelsea, let's get back into this case that you've been talking about in Missouri, about this couple who went through in vitro fertilization. They had four embryos, I guess two of which were already implanted. They've divorced, and now they have these two frozen human embryos, and there's a court battle over them in which Missouri Right to Life has gotten involved on behalf of the mother. The court ruled against the mother, based on it was three things that you mentioned. Is there an appeal going on in this case?
Well, yeah, that's what this is. That's what this brief is. It's been brought to the appellate court. This is their. I'm not a legal expert, but I just know that this is their part of the appeal, and so they're presenting their case, and then the husband has to present his. So they're getting together this this brief and the parties involved in order to work on that. So
what seems inconsistent about his argument in this, because he obviously, what I think, either wants the embryos destroyed or given to other infertile couples. He doesn't want, I guess, his ex-wife to have his child, and yet at the same, you know, it's almost like they talk out of both sides of their mouth. Is this just matter that just happens to be, you know, property, or is this really your child? You know, it seems like you choose whichever is most convenient for the particular legal argument you're making.
Right, and that's what's kind of ridiculous about, like, the first argument that the court ruled on, this right not to procreate, which, you know, I talked to my friend Jim Cole, who is the general counsel for Missouri Right to Life, and he actually edited a lot of this brief, and he said that's actually been used in similar cases, this right not to procreate, not to force a child onto another human being when one parent wants to give birth to the embryos and the other one doesn't. The ridiculous part about that is that procreation has already taken place. So they've already agreed to procreate. They've created the human beings. So this right not to procreate, as they point out in the brief, it's not even an issue. It's not an argument, because procreation has already taken place. Now all of a sudden they want to claim, you know, oh, well, I don't really want these children that I created, you know, and but I actually was reading through Jim sent me the whole brief last night, and I've been reading through it, and it's so well written, and it really brings up, you mentioned the Dred Scott case in St. Louis, and that's actually mentioned in here, not specifically, but they talk about, you know, how the ratification of the 13th Amendment, you know, they say that is what ended the period of American history in which human life was classified as property. And we, you know, our legacy of having enslaved human beings, given that legacy, it should raise a red flag of caution against treating these human beings as property. You know, we've had this sort of sordid history of treating people as property, and we're repeating the cycle all over again. They're just two, you know, not formed human beings yet. So it's a little bit harder for us to kind of see that. But scientifically, we know it's fact, and that's a lot of that's presented in this brief, is a scientific case for recognizing the life beginning at the moment of conception. And so it's just really well written. And the thing that it keeps bringing up is the best interest of the children, which is what I always harp on with IVF and the third party reproduction. is what is in the best interest of the child. You have to understand that these are children involved, these are human beings involved, and their rights should be considered as well. So that's what I'm just very impressed with reading through it, and I'm hoping, I'll be looking forward to see how this goes. Well, Jim said it could be like a year and a half or more before anything.
Well, it's another example, too, of how under the cloak of alleged science, this redefinition of life's beginning being about implantation as opposed to, conception is not rooted in science. It's rooted in agendas that facilitate these types of things precisely. Mm-hmm. Because if we can classify this as property if it's not yet been implanted, because human life really has not begun.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, if you look scientifically, as you said, mm-hmm. The science is that these are human persons.
The science is there, and as they point out in the brief, is at least in Missouri, the law is there, where you have that law protecting the rights from the moment of conception, and there are cases where, where an unborn child was killed, and they were able to be prosecuted for first-degree murder of an unborn child, and the court had ruled it didn't matter whether the embryo was viable at the time or not. So there is actually some legal precedence in some of these cases, but definitely, yeah.
Well, and one of the things, and we talked a little bit about this off-air, it does raise this is kind of a bioethical quandary.
Yes.
A lot of bioethical thinkers, and particularly Catholic bioethical thinkers, struggle with is what to do with the dilemma of frozen embryos that have been created, because they obviously, we can't destroy human life, so they can't be destroyed. But the implantation itself, implanted in the womb, whether it's the biological mother or whether it's a surrogate or someone who's adopted them, because of that separating out of procreation from the marital act or the sexual union, that's bioethically problematic. And so I know there's a lot of discussion about trying to come to some definitive statement on what can be done in terms of the implantation of frozen embryos, bioethically speaking.
Right. It's it's something that certain people have written quite a bit about. I mean, people that I follow anyway, Dr. Gerard Nadal and my friend Rebecca Taylor, who I do bio talk with, they've kind of tackled this this area, and it's an interesting argument that leads to more and more questions the further you get into it, because it seems like a no-brainer, adopt these embryos, let them, grow to term. But in Donum Vitae, it says that it talks about the respect for the unity of marriage and conjugal fidelity and demands that the child be conceived in marriage. And so there's this question of whether that violates the bond between the husband and a wife when you implant another man's child into her uterus to be brought to birth. So those are some of the questions, at least for the church, what the church is dealing with. They have to be consistent in their teaching. So that's why there's a question. I think some people are like, why would there even be a question? Well, we have these certain teachings on marriage and the bond between the husband and wife, and they're kind of grappling with that. So, but at least as far as it goes right now, there isn't one right answer. So if you do favor, I know several people who do and have written about this. Dr. Nadal is one of them. He wrote The Case for Embryo Adoption, and specifically mentioned the violation against the conjugal union and addressed that. But it's definitely, this is the mess we're in though. This is what happens when you run with science before really understanding or thinking about where it's going to take you.
Absolutely. And it's an important bioethical principle. Maybe the most important one to remember is the ends don't justify the means. No matter how good an end the means don't justify it. We got about 2 minutes, Chelsea. Mm-hmm. I wanted to. Can you give us one bioethical winner for 2015 and one bioethical loser?
Well, a lot of the winners at the Center for Bioethics and Culture named theirs. They do this every year, and a lot of the winners, most of the winners and losers, had to do with euthanasia and surrogacy. I think definitely the big winner would have to be the European Parliament that condemned all forms of surrogacy, and and specifically stating that it undermines the human dignity of the woman, since her body and its reproductive functions are being used as a commodity. I think that's huge. I think that was a big thing, but definitely the losers, as I wrote on my blog, which the CBC didn't even mention, which I can't even believe. As I said on mine, it would be the UK, which became the first in the world to offer three-parent fertility treatments. And then China, where scientists had confirmed that they'd been editing genomes of human embryos in IVF clinics. So, and those were major. I mean, those two things were actually where a lot of other places called the biggest scientific breakthroughs of the year. So those would be my losers for sure.
Well, and those are things we all talked about. You had your finger on them on the show, and as I know you will going forward. Always a pleasure, Chelsea, and appreciate all the great work you do.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Blessings. Enjoy that warm weather, and think about us Eskimos up here.
I will.
We'll be back in just a minute on the Mike Allen Show. We'll spin that dollar catechism wheel.